Thank you for downloading this Decennio podcast. For more podcasts, visit deceniojournal.com. A small note before we start. This episode was recorded live from Maisonnet-Objet, so you might hear a few bumps or even an announcement or two in the background. Think of it as all part of the rich Parisian fairground atmosphere. And to experience that atmosphere for yourself, why not visit the next edition of the fair, which will take place from the 9th to 14th of September 2024. Hello and welcome to this episode of Conversations in Tech Eden, How Can Design Connect to Nature? A podcast by Decennio in collaboration with Maison and Objet. I'm your host, Ollie Stratford, Editor-in-Chief of Decennio, and I'm joined today by a really interesting panel for our topic, A Natural Interface. Today we're going to be discussing ways in which designers' relationship to materials and the natural world is, and also examine some different approaches towards combining technology and design into more sustainable products. I'm going to go through the panel now and they will tell you a little bit about their work. So first up, we have Felix Rasselhorner, co-director of Wint Design Lab, a Berlin-based studio which is centred on moving from human-centred tech towards regenerative design strategies. Felix, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, happy to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your work?
Sure. So we are interfacing technologies with sustainable and regenerative purposes. So we want to find out what new technologies can actually bring to the table in the context of sustainable living, sustainable production, and ecosystem regeneration.
Super. Next, we have Susanna Lascaridis, the founder of Blue Cycle, an initiative which aims to reuse marine plastic waste generated from shipping and fishing activities, creating furniture and objects from that material.
Thank you so much for having me. What Blue Cycle does is a holistic approach for the marine plastic waste issue. So we start by the collecting of the material. That's a very important thing. And that sort of guides us to what we do with this material. As I said, it's mainly plastic, so polyethylene, polypropylene, and that sort of material. And we try to reuse as much of it as we can.
And last but not least, we have Simon Dupetit, a Paris-based independent designer, whose work often focuses on material research and exploration of different production systems. Simon, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you. Yes, my name is Simon and I'm a Paris-based designer. In my work, I like to explore new way of conceiving objects. And as well as I'm doing researches about modes of production and the relationship between men and object that come from this.
Excellent. Well, let's start off with a little bit of discussion of some of the terminology, because sustainability has become a huge area of discussion within design. And I'm curious as to how comfortable you all feel with that term. I mean, Felix, I notice you speak on your website more about this idea of regenerative solutions. What do you feel about sustainability? Because it's well-intentioned as a term, but gets thrown around a lot and I think sometimes has been a little bit devalued. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's a good question because we can subtract materials and we can then substitute them. Or we can make a product to be recycled. But actually what we should do is to think about how we can help the ecosystems with our actions. And the potential in technology or combining technology and products or new product systems could also lie in helping an ecosystem to thrive, to grow, and to actually do what it should do, because we're living with it and we are also reliant on it, right? So I think there are different steps on the way and each step is really important. But also you can only do what's in the realm of the project, right? But one purpose can be to restore something, to work with the nature instead of against it.
Susanna, I think that naturally flows into your work very much about restoring ecosystems and very much dealing with a situation that by its nature is not sustainable. This situation of plastic waste cannot go on. How do you feel about the language used around this area?
I mean, I completely agree with what you said, and I think that it has to do, it's a much larger term, and we sort of always in our mind combine it with something being recycled or recyclable, which, of course, that is a main theme in what we do, so we try to recycle this material and recycle the actual items as well. But I think we need to like take a step back and see the fuller picture. So we need to change, become more conscious consumers, and the products that we actually develop allow for more conscious consumerism. So I think the fact that we are constantly over, you know, buying things and promoting products, we need to think of different modes of how we use products, maybe like sharing schemes or renting schemes. I think we need to change the full picture of how we see ourselves in relation to the products that we make and the products that we expect to bring out to the market. So it's much more than just, you know, recycling something and bringing a new product into the market.
That notion of making seems important. And Simon, I think this flows into your work, because alongside speaking about the ecological side of this, there's lots of social considerations around how we make and produce. And I know you did a really interesting research project in Senegal, for instance, looking at different local modes of production. Maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that project and your thinking around that.
First, I agree with both of you with your definition of sustainability. In my opinion, as a designer, it's also about choosing the good material for the good application and choosing the good production system for the good application also. It means being clever about the design, the assembly, and keep in mind that while you are drawing, there is a process of making after. And this is really important to take care about these parts when you are conceiving an object. As for the Senegal research, yes, of course, the idea was to open my mind on other possibilities to conceive like objects and to imagine production systems. And when I get to the Senegal, I choose this country because some part of my family come from there. And when I get there, I wanted to discover how the city of Dakar was organized through the making of objects. And I had no ideas on how much it was very well organized and how the craftsmanship, but also the upcycling, was really providing all the city in everyday life objects. So that was the whole point of my research there.
This is an open question to the group. What impact do you think design can have in this, aiding the environment, aiding ecology? Because to an extent, all of you are dealing with systems bigger than yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, Susanna, you're looking at this question of marine waste. Felix, you're very interested in wider systems and feeding into them. Simon, that's exactly what you just described there, these systems of production. Now, design can be impactful, but how impactful can it be faced with some of the scale of those challenges?
It's pretty straightforward, and it sort of touches on what Simone said earlier, that our primary driver, let's say, is the actual material that we collect. So that is what guides the rest of the process. So, for example, we have to think of what we will be designing based on the abundance of each material collected. We've made it a principle, of course, never to actually purchase recycled material, exactly because there's so much that we're collecting, and we're only based in one country in the European Union. So you can imagine the scale of this issue globally. So what we are trying to do is direct the particular streams of material and make them traceable. So all of our items are fully traceable to the actual source of the waste that we have collected. And I think that's very important for us to understand the life cycle of the material as well. And the way that design plays into this is, which also goes into my earlier conversation about changing the way that we perceive an object, is about the fact that we always try to make something, most of our majority of our latest items are multifunctional. So we always try to give an idea that you don't have to acquire, as I said earlier, more things, but you can have, for example, a bench that doubles as a table, that doubles as a chair, or something that you don't propose for the other person to necessarily have to like continue buying and adding new things to, which is basically adding more plastic. So I think we have to have a holistic, conscious approach in the way that we design, we collect, and we add everything together to create more conscious consumers in the end.
Yeah, I think it's great what you just said, that there's a responsibility lying in the consumers. And I feel that there's also a big responsibility on the producers, right? But the companies that are like big players, they are not aware of it, or they don't want to go into this responsibility. And this is a big problem. So we have to make them aware of these issues. And yeah, recyclability, we know that there are no resources in Europe. So we start to harvest what we already bought as a new resource. Isn't it funny? Right? So it's like the new stuff that we actually as our main resource now that for the new products. What design can offer here is, I think, rethinking, because it's not only about making products more efficient and more sustainable and less toxic. This is really a challenge. But I think what design can offer is really a new perspective on the term of sustainability, because it offers us to live differently and not to see it as a problem of scarcity because we have the resources, but as an opportunity to live differently with the things around us, right?
How do you think it can do that, to shift a sort of social mindset, to shift people's idea of always got to go buy the new shiny thing? What can design concretely do to try and change that course a little bit?
Before I start a project, there is a question I always ask myself is, does this new object deserve to exist? Because sometimes, and I think it works also for brand or big manufacturer, the ideas you have in mind is so powerful that you forgot just to take a step back and ask yourself, what are you giving more than just an object? Because it's very easy to think an object that will be very nice looking or maybe useful, but absolutely not necessary in the context we are living. So that's, I think, the first point that we need to be focused on before we start anything ambitious.
I think editing is, and editing in conceptually, you know, editing our thoughts, editing the process, editing the ideas we bring out there, is something that is a lot more, you know, controlled and conscious, I think, now than it used to be. And we see that in everything from, you know, larger brands, maybe not so much, but conscious producers try to be a lot more, yes, exactly, conscious about what they produce, which involves a lot of thought process editing for something to be put out there and be worthy of, you know, being there and offering something to whoever's going to be using it, whether that is a community or individuals. So I think that's edit has become a lot more important in the way that we manufacture things.
This must be challenging, though, to an extent for younger studios and younger businesses, because comparatively, everyone here is relatively new in the field of design, right? I mean, Felix, you're one of this year's rising talents at Maison and Objet. Susanna Bluecycle is one of the Future on Stage nominees. And I think we all know the way you tend to get attention, right? In this world, the way people tend to find out about you, you constantly do new things. And the moment you've done something, everyone wants to know, oh, great, so what are you doing next? What's the next thing? There is quite an economic pressure and also a cultural pressure to keep making, to keep doing new things. How do you feel about that in your careers? Is that something which is a challenge, that pressure to produce and that pressure to make yourself known?
I think that, you know, talking about the way that we develop materials and we develop products, I think that very much of what many brands, new brands do, especially the ones that are, you know, very based on the makers and on the materials, has to do with R&D. So I think R&D is a constant in most of our works anyway. So it's not so much about the final item as well. So, I mean, we've always said from the beginning, then if nothing comes of Bluecycle, it's been such a exciting and fruitful R&D process from start to finish, that in itself is worth it. So, you know, you don't have to be a, you know, a big fancy brand or make huge sales or everything, because the focus is on trying to solve a particular issue that you've been dealing with. So I think in the end, if nothing happens, you've still got such R&D data and valuable information that, you know, even to pass it on to somebody else or to any, you know, other designer or a community that can make these information more useful, I think that's, you know, good enough for us at the end of the day.
I want to shift us a little bit to looking at technology, because the theme of this year's Maison and Objet is Tech Eden and this notion of how technology could help potentially. And it's quite an interesting theme because, you know, on the surface, Eden is this very optimistic thing, right? It's a utopia, but we all know how the story of Eden ends up. Everyone gets kicked out, right? The Eden comes to an end. And I think maybe there's some similar skepticism around technology, right? When we're talking about the ecological crisis, climate crisis, there are schools of thought which say, well, new technologies will help with this. New technologies are going to improve the situation. You have a lot of other thinkers who would say, like, absolutely, we do not need more technology. That is not the issue. The problems are social and economic. How optimistic are you? How much weight should we put on technology as this positive thing that might help with some of the issues we're facing?
Yeah, I think I like the reference to Eden because we are in our core super optimistic about the future. I think towards tech we are interested, but with a natural skepticism. And I would maybe put it in a context where, like, I would say we are not this kind of Silicon Valley super optimistic tech will solve all of our problems, mm-hmm. and we can continue living as we are living right now. But I think the interesting perspective also a bit within Europe and also what we are standing for is to connect heritage with technology. And this is something that is, I think, powerful because then it means we can look back what we did right and then improve it with new technologies. So this is something that I like to think of a productive way with working with technologies.
I can only speak about sort of what we do because I'm not so cognizant on, you know, the level of technology used in other companies. But I think that it's very important to be able to use technology to assist to what we'd already been doing anyway. So it definitely saves on resources in many cases, and it allows for a development in the mode of production. So, for example, the way that we work in Blue Cycle is that we don't carry any stock. We, you know, only print and only produce whatever we are going to be selling or whatever we're going to be exhibiting, for example. So that allows us to be, the way that we use robotic 3D printing is that I find that it's a very circular method of producing because, you know, we create minimal waste. We're allowed customizations that we're not allowed with more traditional methods like molds, for example, where we can change the actual production process as we go along, which I think that allows for other liberties, design liberties and time liberties that you wouldn't get with a set production time frame of a more traditional, let's say, method. I've found quite interesting the past year the idea of designing through technology like AI and suggesting designs to see how these would be evolved and, you know, getting prompts of design, you know, a chair that looks like a fountain kind of thing, and then actually making that. And I think that would be an interesting experiment in R&D on what the final things would be. I think we should try to use it to our benefit only, and of course not allowed to, you know, kick us out of Eden in the end of the day. So definitely a helping tool, but, you know, again, all of our items, for example, are finished by hand and they couldn't be any other way. So it's such a, you know, hands-on experience either way, which I don't think will ever be completely removed from the equation.
I suppose one of the difficulties of this discussion is technology is such a loose term, right?
Yeah.
It could be any number of things. I mean, I think when we say technology, people's mind tends to leap, like you said, to AI, yeah, to these kind of high technologies, computers, but it doesn't have to be, right? There are any number of different technologies. There are low technologies, more traditional production methods are technologies. Similarly, like you say, different technologies for distributing and manufacturing design. What does the term mean to you? Simon, maybe we can start with you.
When
technology is brought up, what do you think about it?
I'm not like an expert about technology, but in my field, as I'm doing a lot of lighting and lamp, I think that it's crazy that it's impossible to make a lamp made in France just because of nobody is making bulb anymore. And in Europe, it's the same. So about technology, I'm just asking myself if it wouldn't be an interesting field to explore how to build ourselves object we are using every day just to control our own product chain on so used semi-finished products as a bulb or as wire or as electrical connecting stuff. All this material that we need to buy from the outside of the world that we could make here easily, I think.
Felix, might ask you as well, the term technology, how useful is it to you in your work?
Yeah, for us, it's I like the broadness of technology because we're working, for instance, with biotechnologists, right? Mm. So you see that we're living in the 21st century, so there's the biological revolution. We can now, with CRISPR-Cas, like see an RNA and maybe work with it. So there's some interesting things going on. From a design perspective, technology is always interesting because we kind of, we see the potential, so we work with it. And we think it maybe a bit further, and we see, have a different angle towards it. So for me, what I really like, or what we do at Wind, is we collaborate with high tech or with really knowledgeable people that are specifics in their field, and they have this one way street of thinking, and we diversify it. And I think that's interesting in the, or that's needed in the field of technology, because sometimes technological innovations are just made because they're possible. And we ask, yeah, but why? And why are they feasible? Why would we have it? Why do we need AI? Or why do we need biotechnology? What can it actually solve? So I think design and is really connected to technology. And for me, it's super important to have this connection also in my practice.
Something which seems to be coming out in all of your answers is this idea of design is good at communicating, right? And that might be with the creators of technology, helping them to see a different route their technology could move through, communicating a problem to a wider audience that people might not even be aware of. Is that something you'd agree with, that this communicative role to design and that's impact on tackling some of these ecological problems is important?
I completely agree with what you said, because I think that what we try to do and what most younger brands, let's say, try to do is bring out a conversation and set out issues on the table that are now a lot more easy to put on the table and format them in the way that open up for discussions and allow the actual issue to become part of the design process. So I think there's even from the starting point of how we start designing and how we start thinking of what we'll be producing, the whole part of the work becomes a lot more conceptual. And I think that this concept is, you know, presented as the final object. So I think there's definitely a wide range of how, you know, the final item can communicate the story, whether that is just focusing on promoting the R&D issues that have gone into a project, or whether that is trying to also add in, you know, a creative and aesthetic aspect to whatever it is that we're producing. But I think the storytelling aspect is what is what makes it communicative.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I just want to add something, because as designer, when I'm drawing an object, I have a lot of knowledge about the production chain and everything that that englobes the making of an object. And I feel that it's nice if you can put some of this knowledge into your drawing, so when the consumer that will use the object, even if it's not the whole point of the object, he just understands what you wanted to say. Mm. It's like, as we live surrounded by objects, I believe that it is important as a designer to share my language with those who are going to use it.
I think this is an interesting point, this maybe a greater legibility of objects and greater legibility of the material, understanding what it is you're being presented with. I mean, if you look at technology, we came through that phase of like the Apple products, right? And they were great in their own way, but as an object, they were completely sealed. They didn't tell you very much, right? Perfect white plastic. It feels maybe as if that belongs to the past a little bit, and the more positive route now is to be a bit more upfront about what these materials are. Does that feel important, that design can play a role in highlighting these materials a little bit more and making people more aware of what it is they're buying?
Yeah, from my perspective, it's extremely important. And there's also even, because we did a project, a collaboration with Space 10, where we thought about the digital layer of these materials. So we can put a lot of effort in the material itself. But maybe for some, it's interesting to look at it as, can we add something digital so that actually the product has a longer use phase, it can be repaired. So to have all the steps of the circularity, this cascade model, so that in the end, when we recycle the material, it had a really efficient life. But this is from the production point of view, it's the efficiency. And then how can we convert it into this playful, optimistic design, right? So we worked with a digital layer of a tree that, and the metaphor of a tree that grows, and it grows longer and it becomes more beautiful the longer you own the object. So to have this these metaphors also in our in the new age, I think, is kind of important. And yeah, for us, it's like there's this level of materiality, but then we also have the level of digitality that can maybe add to the materiality and to the overall goal.
We talked a little bit earlier about this idea of storytelling and that being a positive and being a strong thing that design can do. I suppose the negative flip side of storytelling, at least when you're in this area, is this issue of greenwashing, right? Mm. And the potential for designers and brands to put things out there that present as if they're a useful, positive contribution. But, you know, actually, it's just putting more stuff out there. I mean, we spoke right at the start about the need to sometimes just do less. I'd be curious for all of your individual takes on this issue of greenwashing, how you try and steer clear of it, its impact. I mean, Susanna, maybe we can start with you, because I think it's very clear in your field. There's a lot of discussion around these
materials. Exactly. I think it's very, it's a more like straightforward, let's say, field where we're faced with greenwashing every day. I think for us, what is very important is that the way that our studio works is that it's fully accessible to anybody. So we always invite people to come and witness the actual process of the collection of the material. And, you know, we try to, all of our data is available to whoever asks. So we try to be, you know, more conscious about the way that we share our products. We always try to, you know, make people question whatever it is that they're seeing and, in a sense, demand answers. Not in a negative way, but in the fact that, as you mentioned earlier, being more transparent, I think, is extremely important in the way we work. And the fact that at the end of the day, knowing that what you've done speaks truth for the actual object and the whole process is something that, for us at least, gives us immense pride, you know, especially when you're faced with multi-layers of greenwashing and of fake claims or anything. But I do think that, you know, for a sense of a wider conversation, which might not be relevant right now, is that, again, there's so many levels, let's say, of greenwashing. I do feel that at the stage where we are now, any step to become better is definitely important and definitely something that should be encouraged. And I don't like, you know, straight going into bashing somebody for saying that, you know, this is recyclable when it's like 95%. So, well, what about the rest 5%? I don't think we should, you know, be negative towards any attempt people are trying to be more conscious consumers and more conscious designers and producers and manufacturers, because that is just, it's sort of like, you know, flips the coin on becoming negative, you know, whereas the whole process is like encouraging people to become more transparent, explaining exactly what happens with each material and the whole process behind it. And of course, from a producer's point of view, acknowledging that you can always become better and you can always become a lot more transparent and a lot more conscious in the way that everything is made. So I think it's basically sort of, you know, dealing with everything with a completely, let's say, open heart and saying, you know, this is what I'm doing. It might not be perfect. I'm, you know, trying to learn, trying to become better. And that's what I would like to encourage, you know, other people to do as well, instead of, you know, attacking somebody straight off the bat for, you know, you're greenwashing. I'm not talking about like consciously misdeclaring something, you know, as true when it's false. But this is a process. It's not something that happens from one day to the next. I think, you know, this is something that is a part of a wider conversation of becoming more optimistic rather than more judgmental.
Yes, I think it's a really good direction to being 100% transparent about the making, because when I see an object, I have a lot of questions about it if I'm interested in. And what's the story behind is like the biggest question, and there is a real lack of information in everyday life project. So in my work, and as I understand in yours also, I just promise myself that everything will be transparent. I took a lot of video of the making, and then I share the name of the craftsman, so they are a real part of the project. And any question about how it was made is answered at the moment.
Well, that's maybe a good point on which to end. So thank you to listener for joining us today. And thank you also to our panelists, Felix, Susanna and Simon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Decennio podcast. For more podcasts, visit deceniojournal.com. This podcast was made for and supported by Maison et Objet. It was produced by Evie Hall and edited by Lara Chapman. Our music is by Zapsplat.